Gee, I do have a question. Is there something specific that you're looking to happen that may not be happening?
Start.
Does it work? Oh.
I hear you, Pius. This is fantastic. Okay, moving on to item C under new business, the draft PU 2020 CCDDB funding guidelines are in the booklet beginning on page 23 to 31.
You know what? That's a typo. Sorry. That should be funding priorities, for the first one.
The second one, the guidelines?
Second one's the guidelines.
Shouldn't have approved that agenda.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay, the funding priorities begin on page 23 through 31. And we are, it's still in kind of a draft phase, although you guys have done a wonderful job. Tweaking, but there's a few, there'll be a few little changes, I'm assuming.
Just in this, in the, if we get some feedback from agency providers or stakeholders, you know, we send this document out to parents of people who have disabilities who often give us really robust feedback. I don't feel like it's, I wasn't close enough. So we've already sent the funding priorities out to the stakeholders and the and agencies, and we'll just, you know, if there's feedback from them that changes the priorities, then you'll see a slightly different draft at the hopefully at the November meeting so that you can approve it. But, you know, I think we spent a lot of time on it, so I think we felt pretty satisfied with where we got. We may have missed something.
Okay, item D, board direction. Does anybody have anything to bring to us today?
I do have a question. I remember that the agencies were having a great deal of difficulty meeting the accounting requirements. Have these been changed in here? Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I see it now. Never mind.
But I'm glad that that's important to you. I am.
Well, so I think that's probably it for board direction. So then does anybody have any further comments or questions regarding the funding guidelines, which begin on page 32? I just want to say, when I looked through it, I had a couple of questions about maybe a few little ambiguities in the language more than anything else, really more about making sure that we're referencing the board we think we're referencing in certain areas, more so than content. I had just a couple of questions about refining some of that.
That's actually, and that kind of input is very helpful to me. I had noticed one of the points that you brought up, which was that sometimes it says just says board president. There's also one place where it says mental health board and it should be DD board. So it's worth it for me to go back in and look at details like that. We do have, Chris and I are meeting with people. It's very hard to get together with them. Meeting with people who run independent audit firms who would be performing or have experience performing the independent audits that we've required for a long time. We're getting feedback from them that could change some of these recommendations. And since I finished this draft version, I noticed some other things that were where the language is not clear enough toward what we wanted. I also had a conversation with United Way that one of the changes we were proposing to make was based on something they do that they're not going to do anymore. So essentially the really big pieces of it are if an organization has a total agency revenue of lower than 300,000, which is the state's threshold, we would no longer require an independent audit, but we would require a financial review. This is where United Way has changed their practice, or they're going to. So now they have an option. And so I think that makes sense, so that an agency who desires to do an independent audit because maybe they're going to apply for other funding and they need an audit to start with, could still have the option to do that even if their revenue were lower than 300,000. So that's a change that's not manifested in these revisions. And then further, we got some feedback yesterday about maybe even creating another tier, maybe under 100,000 or under 50,000, you would ask for a compilation. We would require a compilation and do away with the waiver for under 20,000. So we're working on those, doing some research now. This is one of the other large 708 boards, which is the mental health board, made some changes to their policies 2 years ago that were sort of like that. But I thought that the changes they made actually increased their risk instead of improving the accountability. So I didn't go in that direction, but this is a little bit different from that direction. So Chris is doing some research. We'll keep meeting with people. I would really love to bring you a final draft for approval in November, because these have not been touched in many years. But I'm thinking that it's important enough that we need to get it right. So if we can't bring it back to you in November, I apologize, but we'll get it. We want to get it right.
Explain to me, being very new at this, the difference between a compilation versus a financial review versus an audit. What does this mean, and what will it mean for these small organizations?
Well, those are defined things. So to an independent audit firm, they will mean, it's clear what they mean. I don't know what they mean, so it's hard for me to write about them, you know, and I don't want to make it up. So I've asked for some details like that. I presume that each one of those products would still require presentation using our schedules, you know, our, and then there's an auditor's checklist that we've been using for a while. I think that all of those items would still be required. It's just they may not need to be collected by a CPA and a firm. They might be something that could be directly provided to the office. There's things like 990s and proof of payroll taxes. There are things that agencies have and they could share with us. So I think a financial review is analytical, but they don't necessarily provide an opinion. So where an independent audit is analytical and provides opinions, is that right? Am I getting it right? And a compilation is a little bit, then that's the brand new idea that just popped out yesterday.
There's
so
no test whatsoever.
Okay. So it might not, the risk might still be high around that. I'd love to have a final product for you soon. So if you have other questions or concerns about this, please feel free to contact me. We'll be working on this, you know, pretty actively. It's been the exciting thing going on for a while. So.
Okay, item F, successes and other agency information.
Becca with Community Choices. We had a couple kind of exciting things that have come up in the last, month or two. For one, we just have organized a sort of a partnership or a collaboration with RACES and also with Public Health to provide a comprehensive sexuality education class starting in January for our members with disabilities. And we're going to kind of partner that with a social skills communication women's group and men's group. That's going to be co-facilitated with our staff and with one of the educators from RACES. So just kind of giving people that opportunity to sort of process some of the information that they're going to get with the class through through public health. So we're really excited about that. We've had a number of people. There's been some webinars that some of our members have been participating in that kind of are just an opportunity for folks to ask questions in that area. And there's been a lot of interest, both in terms of our members with disabilities and their families, so we just definitely felt like it was a need. So that'll be starting up after the holidays. We also, I'm really excited, we found somebody a job. We've been working with them for quite a while. He's an individual who has some pretty significant support needs. He's working at premium seating at the U of I in the stadium. So that was really exciting, and sports is a huge interest of his. So that felt like a really kind of exciting success for him and for his family. It's also somebody who he's getting ready to move into a group home. So it's been kind of an interesting process of collaboration, sort of meshing our supports along with the ones that he's going to be getting as part of his Scylla award. So that's always can be a little complicated, so we're kind of making the path as we go there. And then we've been working with a woman. She's been living at home with her family. She's around 50 years old, and she just moved out for the very first time in the last couple weeks, so we're really excited for her as well. And then do you want me to talk about leave? Okay. So sometimes we come and talk together, but the table doesn't allow for that quite as well today. We're also excited, our LEAP project between Community Choices and DSC, we have our first Lunch and Learn, where we're going to be inviting businesses that we have done the LEAP certification for to come in and sort of get some additional training feels strong, but some additional opportunity for discussion and collaboration between businesses, and we're focusing on how to build an inclusive
an inclusive work environment.
sort of within that, how do you support your frontline staff to be supportive of a coworker who might have a disability, and just sort of how do you make that a welcoming environment, and sort of not just from the top down, which is sort of the LEAP training really looked at, training managers and hiring staff and HR staff. And this is looking at, like, how do you help that kind of settle in through your entire workforce? We've got two businesses that are coming to sort of, that we've sort of each identified as great leaders in that, in their own business. One of them is Urbana Park District. And the other one is First Federal Bank. So we have some of the staff from each of those organizations coming to sort of share their perspective with some other businesses, and there'll be some time for networking too. So that's on Monday.
I'll segue in that from DSC. Just a couple personal successes. We've had our art classes going on at the Crow for about a year, and it's really been exciting to see some people just gain more confidence in their artistic ability or just their interest. And one of the women who has been involved since the very beginning is now pursuing art classes at Parkland College. And it's just amazing to see her interest blossom. So we're really excited for her to expand that. John Cahill is the staff person who leads those, and his background is art. And he really just has a wonderful ability to meet with each person and to help support them at the point that they're at. And people are really starting to kind of take control of what they want to do. We're more interested in this area. No, we don't want to learn any more about that. And I'm just amazed at how well they're doing. We, as Community Choices and DSC staff, meet to look at LEAP and whether or not we're actually making a difference. Sometimes we learn about those directly and other times indirectly. And recently, Janice McAteer was just having a conversation with another parent who said that her daughter had been hired by, I think, Rantoul Schools, and that Rantoul Schools' participation in LEAP had been the deciding factor in them hiring her. And we really, Paxton, that's right. And they had come down and participated with Rantoul's. We had a very large Rantoul training. And we wouldn't have even known that if it hadn't been for just kind of an ordinary conversation. So we are making a difference, and I'm sure there are more stories like that out there that we just haven't heard of.
I don't know that I've ever talked at one of these. So I'll segue just very quickly into that and share one more of those. I recently just spoke to at the Exchange Club in Rantoul, and I had a woman stand up there who was part of their chamber and talked, you know, just kind of very organically about having gone through the LEAP program and what that meant to her, and was really promoting it in that area too. So I think you're right, Annette, that I do think that you guys are making a huge difference, and we don't always hear it, and it's really nice when we do. And I'll just take that into just letting you know that coming up on November the 8th is DSC's kickoff for a Tree of Hope. And to her, kind of tying that all together, because it's our 25th anniversary, we have three families coming back. And so I think it's a really amazing thing to be able to see the differences that services have meant in the lives of people who are now in their some early 20s. Some late teens, but it's really worth seeing. You guys obviously will all get an invitation, but just wanted to extend a personal one to you and say that I think it'll be worth a couple of hours of your time. It's also our annual recognition event where we recognize an employer of the year. We're doing a public service award and then a personal achievement award, which is an individual that we serve. So November 8th at 4 o'clock. Thank you.
Okay, old business item A, an analysis of the PY 2018 service data is included in the packet beginning on page 52 through 71. Comments or questions?
Full year data, I didn't break it down into the fourth quarter, so this is inclusive of some second, third, and fourth quarter, so it's the full year. So it just gives you a breakdown of the number of people and the services that they're choosing.
Is there a way to maybe give the percent of voters for each country?
I'm sure there is. It might take me playing around and working on it, but I'm sure we can figure that out. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And is there any relationship that we see between the participants for service activities and followers for service activities?
Yeah, before vacation.
No, there's some things that are intuitively correct. We would expect that because every participant comes with some paperwork, we would see high numbers of people getting paperwork and a high amount of time that staff spend on the paperwork related to those people. That's good. I mean, that's not what the people came for. They came for a service, but for accountability, that, yay, people are documenting the services. So that's good. And then what did we talk about before you went on vacation? Like, we also see, you know, involvement with service coordination, which is required if people have multiple services. And just for the planning of one service.
And we talked about looking at the unduplicated count. So hopefully in the next month's packet, we'll see the total number of clients and the total number of programs involved.
Favorite was your the combined of all programs, just looking at what you're funding per hours. The things that you're funding the most of are employment and work activities and independent living skills. So I think that matches with the stated priorities that we've held for a few years. That's great to see. for the numbers of people served, it's not exactly like that. You know, everybody's getting reporting and planning time, and that's important for all the reasons that we talk about all year. And then continuing client is it sort of a, that's a little bit of an anomaly, right? Do you want to explain why? Because we had, I know we had to talk about that.
Yeah, so on the first quarter report every year, agencies are required to report how many clients were carried over from the previous fiscal year. And so that is high because everybody reported their continuing clients and showed in the online system. And you can't carry over, you can't make a claim without putting in time. So every client that was carried over, they had a chunk of time. Going forward, since the system is on its second year, all of those clients are already in there. They don't have to be marked continuing. We'll know they're continuing unless they're marked new. So claims for only new clients, and that involves intake and actually opening a client. So that does take time to do. So there would be a time associated with opening a new client. But continuing, everyone has just rolled forward. So unless they were closed in FY18 or they're marked new, we know they're continuing. And I can run a query in the online system and gather the number of those clients that are continuing for the different programs.
To looking at this, at our pie chart here, were you interested in understanding more the cost of a particular agency or program to provide that service per client, comparing the different, in other words, how much it would cost between in a planning case management type of effort, service effort versus an employment effort, comparing across those domains, or just understanding if there's discrepancies between agencies in how much it costs to provide a like service? Both of those.
Okay.
And that's, and there are ways to come up with that information from, right. Okay. Item B, the meeting schedules are on pages 72 through 75. We have the CCDDB meeting schedule, the MHB, and a breakdown of the monthly meetings content. Our list of acronyms is on pages 76 through 83. It gets, I think, longer every month, doesn't it?
Well, we ditched the, we finally ditched the arc of the, it's not from the arc, it's, what is that from? It was from the Ligas Family Advocate. Because it was, it had two errors at least, so we decided we're just going to give you, so this got shorter this time, but this is the longer of the two documents, sorry.
it is helpful to have those acronyms. Under item 10, MHB input, we don't have an MHB board member here. Did you want to make any comment about MHB business?
They're roughly the same orders of business that you've had today. They met last week for their regular meeting, and then this evening they have a study session on crisis services. Everyone is welcome to come to that. It's, you know, crisis services have changed a lot this year because the state changed a whole bunch of rules, and the 1115 waiver was approved, and now they're trying to implement it. It's not the 1115 waiver that was originally developed, so it doesn't have total coverage across the state for everything. If there are opportunities in it, the time is very, very short for any providers to take advantage of those opportunities. And we also are seeing, like, you know, whatever you do, you got to do it before the election, because if there's a new governor, processes could get sped up or slowed down. And if the same governor stays, it's some of this stuff could just, it could just get harder to work with. Because, I mean, I shouldn't go into all that, but basically the study session tonight should help to clarify some of what looks pretty chaotic. I mean, crisis services were always kind of difficult to understand. And I mean, this is about, like, I'm in crisis, what phone call do I make? So, like, seems really basic, shouldn't take 2 hours, but I'm sure it will. Because on a practical level, this is really tough stuff. So that could be of interest to some of you. I think when we have people with DD who are having a behavioral health crisis, the situation is considerably worse. So if there are questions about that, the needs of that population, that might also be really helpful. The stuff that the mental health board worked on last week at their meeting was all of the same things that you have today, a new funding priorities draft, the set of funding guidelines with all the revisions that you're seeing here. What else did they do? That might be the main stuff. We had a nice presentation. It was a relatively small meeting. But then they meet in November and have roughly the same agenda that you do as well, because what we're doing is really gearing up to open that application system up so that we can start again in the beginning of the year with considering applications for funding.
And now we're segueing right into your report, so continue, please.
So I have a really ambitious thought about November 14th, and that is to present both boards with a final draft of the funding priorities, a final draft of the three-year plan. Both of those are out for comment right now. We are receiving comments from agencies and stakeholders. I'd love to bring you a final draft of this funding guidelines stuff, but it might not be possible just based on how much advice we're getting and how we have to balance that against research. Another big project in the office is that we're enhancing the application system, because it's been probably 8 years, eight or nine years since we put it into place in the first place. And we've gotten a lot of feedback over the years about things that could be better. Some of what could be better we can't do. Like we can't easily or inexpensively make it really easy to read. So we still have to rely on those browser settings to make it more readable for ourselves. I know that was a really big concern, but this is not a $200,000 application system. It's very bare bones. But the enhancements we're making will be described in your November 14th board packet. I would really like to be able to show you all of that, and then it's a public document that people can look at online. And if they're thinking about applying for funding, they'll know exactly what's different. There were some changes suggested over the years to some of the documents that we just barely ever look at, like the eligibility questionnaire itself. So it's kind of the same as the work we've done in the funding guidelines, just trying to update some stuff. And if we discover opportunities to make things also better, not just update, we're doing that. So the most major change involves Chandra's reports. The required CLC plan format has been an upload and download process so far, and she's been lifting it up every year. Right now she's integrated, and I should probably let you talk about this, but she's incorporated important standards into it, so we're ready to just make it part of the rest of the system, where it's a form that you fill out on the application system, not separately. And we hope that will make things easier for everybody. And then the reports, which are due twice a year, will also be in that format. There's some interoperability now between the budget. All of the financial documents are going to be connected, so that what you submit with the application informs the reports that you're required to submit throughout the year, and variances will be identified. So that should save people some time. And then the application form itself is what I'm been working on these days, because we end up sort of just asking basic questions like target population and services provided, and it's just a lot of words, and then we all sort of go fishing for the things we really want to see. So I thought maybe we should just specifically ask the questions about the things we want to see, and maybe that makes for a simpler application process too. So that's what we're doing now. And it's been really kind of fun to get down in the weeds with you guys. But anyway, that's the most of my report. I could talk about things that are going on at the state and federal levels, and I could just sum it up by people are asking me right now what we should, what they as our legislative liaisons or legislative committees or representatives should be working on that's important to us. And when I say fix the reimbursement rates for the DD waivers and count on needing to increase the appropriation, that is like so important. People with developmental disabilities are at so much risk right now. They're showing up in nursing homes. I mean, it's not been an easy haul for people with DD for decades here, but it's only getting worse. And we're hearing about tragedies that just, like, it's maybe really hard to imagine increasing any line of the budget, but they really need to do this. And it's such a frustrating discussion. Like, the people who ask me what we want, and I say, this is what we want, just can't seem to process it. So it's, anyway, so if you're into clamoring for it with me, this is the time. Anyway, that's it.
Beginning on page 84 through page 89, we have reports from staff, from Kim, Chandra, Chris Wilson, and Barb Bresner, and Sue Suter came and reported on the expo for Barb today. I just want to say thank you all for your good work again this month. Any other comments? Questions?
I just wanted to talk about the case management learning opportunities. Initially, I was calling them trainings, but the presenter who came at the October presentation recommended not telling your staff to go to trainings because that implies that they don't know what they're doing. So I've changed my tune and I'm calling them learning opportunities. The presenter for that was Raul Almazar, and he presented on trauma for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It was so well attended. Agency representation from across the board from agencies that we fund was in the room, and the presentation was so well received. As people were exiting the room, they were asking me when he was coming back. Yes, Deb was there, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. Yeah, I would too. I actually went to another training that he did in Springfield. It was like the follow-up of the presentation, and just he's just wonderful. So the next presentation that I have scheduled is scheduled for November 1st at the Champaign Public Library. From this one, registration will be from 9:30 to 10. Presentation from 10 to around noon, and it is 2-1-1, and they're going to talk about 2-1-1, and they're going to have a few role play scenarios so that case managers and anybody in attendance kind of understand the workings, because sometimes 2-1-1 can be frustrating, and maybe they ask different questions than what you're asking, and tweaking some of what you're doing when you're calling or when the people that you're working with are calling. And then in December, the upcoming training that I have scheduled is law enforcement rules and regulations in response to crisis situations. And this came out of a conversation that we had with some local law enforcement officers about getting some people with disabilities to train law enforcement officers. So they've talked about the regulations and things that, you know, when they show up at a crisis that they have to follow. So as case managers, we're like, why don't you just do this? They're like, well, we have rules and regulations that we have to follow. So just kind of a little bit of back and forth so that case management kind of can see where they're coming from, and they can, law enforcement officers can see where the case managers are coming from. So in January, we'll probably take a little break, and then we'll pick back up in February with, up until June, I have the library booked for these training sessions, so we've got some good things on schedule.